Hello, everyone. My name is Tanya Sigler, and I started my company Practigal about 3 years ago to help entrepreneurs, lawyers, and executives who are stuck in their business or career become unstuck. And part of what I do is listed and documented in my two books, which are Welcome to the Next Level and What's Next for My Career. And as part of that work that I do with clients, I run into topics that I don't do with clients. And so I bring in other experts so that they can talk about the next level and what that means. And today I've assembled a really great panel of business owners, and I will introduce them each individually, and then we'll launch into a discussion talking about how do you manage your schedule when you're running your own business? How do you choose your clients wisely in your own business so you're not run ragged by servicing difficult to deal with clients? And the last topic we'll do is how do you delegate with success? That's everybody's fun one and is a sticking point in running your own business. So let's get started with an introduction. I want to talk about Alice first. She came to this country from Hong Kong with her husband and no network, family, no community. And she quickly realized that the tried and true advice for networking doesn't work. And there's only so many hours in the day. And so we'll hear about that and how she made a scalable system for herself to be able to grow her own business. So welcome, Alice. And I do have to put this little disclosure in the chat window to share with you all. So there, it did it.
Compliance.
Exactly, compliance. We all need to do that. So next, and I met Alice at the same time I met Shannon. So I met them at the Vistage meeting 2 days after I moved to Washington from the San Francisco Bay Area. And they're both in my Vistage group here in the Pacific Northwest. Shannon is just very kick-ass and amazing. She owns her own PR firm. She's been in PR consulting for over 20 years, and she specializes in crisis communication. And when I was at Sega, we had quite a bit of that with litigation and other things. And so that's the type of thing Shannon specializes in. And we'll hear more about her adventures today as well. And then let's see, I want to talk about Pam. Let me go to that. So Pam has always been into safety. She was a lifeguard in high school and specialized in making sure no one died or got hurt on her watch. And she's been an amazing role model for me in terms of running her own business. She started it when she had her daughters so that she could manage her own schedule and lifestyle. So we'll hear how that's actually worked. And now her daughters work in her business as well as her brother. So I'm really interested in that angle and the succession planning, because I've got my boys to do like two things in my business, one help with the website and one help with mailing out books that I signed. So I want to hear more about that. Last but not least is Grace Tiscarino Sato. We've known each other since we were 18 and joined the Cal Band together playing trombone. So that already right there tells you how kick-ass we are. She has had many incarnations, started in the military, joined the Air Force as a navigator, many tours, and finally went out of the military and went to Siemens for a few years, and then started her own publishing business because the publishing model needed to be turned on its head. So with all that said, I want to welcome you ladies, and I want to just start with the question, how do you manage your schedule? Because being able to say no, being able to manage like when you're traveling and having a meeting like this, where Grace is in DC right now, let's talk about that. So maybe Grace, you can start with that because that's what you're doing right now.
I think the key is flexibility and creativity, because when you asked me to do this, the first thing I thought was, will I remember to do it? Because I'll be, my calendar sometimes gets whacked. And it's the day that I drop off my daughter, and where will I be? And you know, what will my schedule be? So yeah, saying no was part of it, because I could have gone to do a dinner tonight with another veteran friend of mine, because she's like, well, it'll really be better for me. We do it on the 23rd. I'm like, no, that's not going to work at all, because then I'll be a spaz trying to find a quiet space in a restaurant. And so, yeah, saying no, manage the schedule, and then being creative with, you know, just where will I be when I have this commitment to participate in this discussion. So I think what I've really learned is to look ahead, which is, you know, I'm a spontaneous person, so sometimes I don't like to look ahead, but knowing when you really have to look ahead versus the time when you can be spontaneous. So I think that balance, that, you know, looking ahead at the schedule, like, just, this is actually a good example. I wanted to pack this week with appointments, but then I thought, why would I do that? Right. And so it's almost like you talk to yourself and you already know what you're supposed to do. And then you have to like slap the other half of yourself that wants to do too much. At least that's the way I do it. But then coming back and saying, what do I want the week to look like? Right. And I think that imagining the week, week by week, I think that's very key for me, especially when I'm traveling. So I think that's what I would do, is like, you know, imagine your week, and then what do you want it to look like, feel like? Do you really want to be like on the floor exhausted every day? Or do you want to give some time in there to walk and get a massage, which I just did before this call? So yeah, yeah, so imagine the week and then say no.
That's been quite a journey for you, because I know that you usually say yes to everything so that you can fit it in, and then you end up being exhausted. So I'm really proud of you for being able to figure out, no, I don't want to do that on this trip. I want to actually save myself and have some time in there. And I know I'm going to ask Pam to talk about the ability to say no and the discipline to say no. And when you went to the Oscars, Pam, and you had the opportunity to hang out with Beyonce at an after party, you ended up saying no. So tell us a little bit about the fortitude and the discipline for that.
Right. You know, I think, and I think Sonia might have heard this before, is, you know, it is really difficult to say no. And I really termed the mantra no into two words, which is new opportunity. So new opportunity. So no doesn't have to be a bad thing. Maybe for women is to look at it as, I'm not saying no to not being able to participate in an after party I'm being invited to by Beyonce. You know, it's just, I'm creating a new opportunity for either me or my business or really something else, yeah. Right? And so, you know, I heard Bill Gates make this statement that said, you know, all of us have 24 hours in a day. It's just, what are you going to choose to do with every minute of those 24 hours? So it comes down to these new opportunities for conversation. So when my children were little, we would literally have these conversations about this soccer game and who are you playing and this basketball game and this recital and this choir. And we would literally go through and say, which one do you need to have me at? And which one would you like to have me at? Mm-hmm. Right? Because as a CEO, right, I am responsible for my kids as well as my customers. And we would literally start going through the calendar like, oh, we play such and such team, but don't go. We're going to wipe them out. You know,
I was like, that's okay. Such an important lesson to teach your daughters early. That's so excellent.
Right. And, you know, it's the need to have and the nice to have. Right. And to really be able to say, even an event like this, right, it's like, because I do get asked to do a lot of speaking engagements, it's like, well, which one do I need to do and which one will be nice to do? Sometimes I need to do things because of revenue, right? So things that do not involve revenue, I need to kind of put down on the list. But for example, today, this wasn't a need to do, but it was a nice to do because I needed it for my soul. Because I needed to pay it forward to other women who I sat in their conferences and listened to them and the things that I gleaned from that. So I think looking at saying no as new opportunity and to really bring a new opportunity to kind of educate your family and friends about what you can and can't do.
So that makes sense in terms of building in a work-life balance. I know one of the things I've tried to do is when I have work trips, I try to plan to see people that I know wherever I'm going. And I know now that I mostly stay with people I know. So I have an opportunity to deepen those relationships as opposed to stay in a hotel and be bored to tears there. So that with the soccer games and teaching your girls about what do you need to have me at versus like to have me at is really a great way to integrate that as well. Alice, you have some calendar hacks. Tell us a little bit about how you manage your calendar.
I'll start with a few things. First, know what you want.
Yeah.
So we might be talking about your goals, your personal goals, or your company business goals. Know what you want. And then second is know your strength. Mm-hmm. And then third is know your capacity. And your capacity could be the same 24 hours just like yesterday, and I was killing it. But today, guess what? I am having a menopause moment.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't. So when I know my capacity, I quickly know that if I know my priorities, I must meet with Sonia, Pam, Shannon, and great woman like Grace in this. So I'm going to conserve energy in the afternoon. Perhaps I'm taking a small nap just to be ready for this because this is important to me.
Yeah.
Just now we talk about saying no. I really love new opportunity. But Brené Brown also said no is kind.
Mm.
It's not about saying no. It's about how you say no. So somebody knock on my door in my office and just come running, you know, crying babies, we call them, right? Whether they are your kids or their employees. I can't deal with this. So-and-so calls so many times, it's urgent.
Yeah.
I have 5 in an hour.
Yeah. My life as a lawyer was, I called it interruptus maximus, because it just felt like it was one long interruption after another. And I never got to the work I started out doing at the beginning of the day. So, you know, I have a long list and you get to like 2 things on your list and then 15 other things on the CEO list. So now I was like, well, I'm going to have to do that. Now I get to run my own company. Well, now it's me managing all those interruptions. So yeah, that's a key important point. Shannon, you just had an interruption with one of your kids. So how do you manage that? In your business?
Not well. I mean, I'll be honest, managing my calendar and schedule is not my strength. And I recognize that. So I need a partner in that activity. Yeah. So from a very practical perspective, I have someone on my team who is better at thinking through the details, quite frankly, and being really thoughtful about how things are stacking up. And the reality about how much time it takes to get from here to here. And, you know, the fact that you have to eat at some point in the day. So she's wonderful. Her name is Addie. And we have some tools that we use, but, you know, recently I've started thinking less about the what on my schedule and thinking more about managing my energy in a day. And, you know, my tendency, I think like a lot of entrepreneurs and Grace, like I heard Sonia mention about you, it's just like, yes, 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 line it up, right? I have a lot of energy. I love what I do. I can just go from meeting to meeting to meeting. But, you know, you can get into these places where you're creating these cycles of literally like, you know, you're on a cortisol high, your body's pumping out endorphins, and then you crash. And then, you know, and if you're not conscious of how you're managing your energy. And Alice, you said it, like, if you know you're headed into something in the evening that you need to preserve some cognitive function for, how are you taking care of your body to have the energy for that? And so I've started, I don't know if that's just maturity. I feel, you know, you guys are all nodding your head. So obviously it's, you know, something you've become aware of at some point as well. But, you know, I know now that, for example, I do media trainings, I do crisis communications trainings, workshops, presentations, trainings, wipe me out. I mean, especially if it's a full day, that there's like nothing more draining for me. I even end up usually with a headache. So like, just thinking about what is the activity and am I building in space in my day for, you know, the things that I need to have to support those? And how are we bunching things up together? I mean, even having a day that's all internal with no external meetings so that I don't have to put makeup on or do or wash my hair or whatever. Yes, it's recovery time. It's that long, long view. So I'm still learning. It's not my strength, like I said, but I am starting to be a little bit more thoughtful about how I'm managing my energy, you know, over the course of a week and a month.
Yeah,
well, can I say something about energy real quick? Because I love how the discussion went from calendar to energy, because I think that's key. And, you know, I'm traveling this week. I'm not at home where my mom is staying with us for the summer after my father's death. I'm not at home where I have my child who's blind and hearing impaired. And I'm not there juggling all of that at the same time as the business, right? So it's a different energy, isn't it? Like when you're traveling, and it's, I think I can build in more time for that recovery. I mean, you know, we flew on Monday. Yesterday was a play day. And Sonia, like you said, you see people, cement relationships. I stayed with an Army veteran friend of mine, and we went and played at the Spy Museum all day. It was just a play day because we just need that with my daughter and her. And then today it was drop off my daughter, a business meeting with somebody about presidential appointments, and then another meeting. And then I just said, I'm not doing anything until we're doing this tonight, because I found it easier. I actually laid in the garden at the National Cathedral for 45 minutes and just looked at the flowers because I was conserving energy, right? So I love how you took it from calendar to energy, because that's what it is, right? We don't really run out of calendar, but we can run out of energy. And then I went and got a massage, so I could be in a totally rested mindset and get back here for this. So
awesome.
Thank you for shifting it to energy, because that's what it is.
Yeah. And I agree. Yeah, I agree with that, Grace. And I think the other thing, because you talked about energy and travel, before COVID, when I was traveling a lot, I actually stopped doing meetings outside of my time zone. Because that's a huge time sucker, where it's like, I'm on the East Coast, I'm working with this customer, but I have to like log on to a meeting or something that's maybe on the California time zone or central time zone. And then I'm using that mental energy, like, don't forget, you know, 10 reminders, you know, or something like that. So
did you see my calendar today? I had alarms, 6:45, log on to Sonia's panel. I mean, it is, because you have to like, don't screw this up, right? But yeah, it's a different vibe. But yeah, you know, I like how, who said it about the soul? I really wanted to do this because I want to contribute to what Sonia's putting together. Yeah. So it's that.
Yeah.
I want to pick this apart a little more, because there's a couple things in here. So there's the calendar itself, which is what the real question was to begin with, but then it morphed into energy. And the second part of that is productivity, is what I heard Shannon say, is when am I the most productive and when am I the most low energy? So there's three things in here. So calendar, which apparently no one wants to talk about, energy, which everyone wants to talk about. And I think that's one of the things I've realized is I don't have to do the things that suck energy for me. Like I get to choose, I get to set that. And, and the other part of that is I have learned when I'm the most productive, it's 7 a.m. to 2 p.m., 2 to 5 p.m. This is when I would walk around the office and talk to people because I needed the social interaction. I needed to like, get out of my head and talk to people. Or I would go to the gym. And then again, from 5 to 7, I'm really productive. And then 7 to 10 p.m., I'm downtime, dinner, whatever. And then if I don't go to bed at 10 or 11, then I'm up for another 3 hours and very productive till about 1 o'clock. After that, it completely falls off and I should just not do it. But learning that and knowing that about me has helped me say no to things in the afternoon. So we go for a walk at 4. So my husband and I, everybody working at home, we go for a walk at 4, which has really helped maintain that energy. Because then I come back and we're like, we've been outside for an hour. We're chatting to each other. It's very, what's the right word? Filling and refueling. So what do you do that, let's just talk about the actual productivity. Have you figured out when you're the most productive? I know, Pam, you said you traveled a lot and it was hard to be productive. And one of the things you put in place was that no meetings outside my own time zone. That's great.
Yeah. I mean, In terms of productivity, I guess it's tough because in my business, you know, we're a safety company, right? We have to make sure people don't die, right? And so I know, I mean, it's just a fact, you know? And so, you know, it's tough because any phone call could involve an OSHA audit or someone who's hurt, or we just used our defibrillator. So, you know, I pretty much understand that we have to be on 24 hours a day. Right. So in serum productivity. So one way that I do handle my own productivity is I read a book called Mindfulness. I'll get the author because I have it. Well, the book's at home, but it's called Mindfulness. But basically one of the things that I, and for Grace, it's written by a former army person who was in the military. So I'll be good. But basically what he talked about is multitasking and content tasking. So when you're working on maybe two things at once, like you're in a meeting, but you're answering a couple emails, or maybe if I'm working on a safety manual and then I'm writing a proposal at the same time. So that's what they call content tasking. And so I really now have the military discipline, right, to make sure I'm not content tasking. That if I just work on one content at a time, finish this proposal, don't get sidetracked by this email that just came in, even if I can answer it quickly, finish the content, I can actually finish it faster with fewer mistakes if I just focus on that one content. And it takes a lot of discipline. I mean, I had to practice by something similar, like I would go to Starbucks and order my drink. And then while waiting for my drink, I would log onto my phone and check a couple emails. Like I would have to have the discipline to order Starbucks, stand there and look at the barista, don't do anything else, and don't be tempted by, I'm gonna look at my phone, you know? And it takes some muscle, but once you develop it, it is pretty awesome on how easy it is for me just to do one content at a time.
Yeah, I think one of the things I did was absorb the, I call it the Tomatillo method because I can never remember Pomodoro. Someone who came up with it used the tomato timer, which is where the name came from, but you set it for 25 minutes and you work on that one thing for 25 minutes. And then 5 minutes, you take a break, go to the bathroom, get a cup of tea or coffee, whatever you need, come back, set the timer again. You do four of those in a row and then take a half hour break to like eat lunch or whatever. And then doing it. And that I never make it to pass three of those because I'm so into whatever I was doing. Like my mind is so into that I don't want to look at anything else and that I can concentrate on it. So that was one method that helped me. Alice, what have you found in terms of focus and priority setting like that? Hold on. Now I can't hear you.
I want to talk about calendar since nobody wanted to talk about it. So I learned from somebody. It's not.
You can share your calendar if you want to share.
In a little bit, because I don't come prepared to open it.
No problem.
Yeah. Anyway, so how does it work is design your perfect calendar. I know it's hard. So because things happen in your calendar. Sometimes it's booked by somebody else, especially you have a team. Mm-hmm. So my perfect calendar is making sure that I have my morning virtuals. I take lunch at the same time every day. I have my desk time, beginning of the day and end of the day. And I open 3 hours Tuesday morning, two hours Tuesday afternoon, 3 hours Wednesday morning, 3 hours Thursday morning, and 2 hours Thursday afternoon. They are white or blank. Mm-hmm. Anybody can go there and book time as long as they give me my biological break time. Mm-hmm. So in other words, no two meetings back to back and no space. So you have to zip. So start with that. I find that is useful, especially you are training your team, because then you can really block your project day or refreshment day. Mm-hmm. And then those 3 days are my focus day.
Yeah. I think that's what's been good about trying to not work on Fridays is that I do end up either playing or I do end up tackling something that I needed to spend a good chunk of time on. So that's what it ended up becoming. Let's see. I was going to ask Shannon about one thing. The most productive time of the day for you. So knowing when you're the most energetic and can tackle things, what does that look like for you?
So I am pretty energetic and can tackle tasks, you know, at any time of day. What I can't do at any time of day is write really well. And writing is a super core sort of skill for my profession. And so for me, if I have to write something that is very nuanced, that's very, complex, I have to do that at like 5 a.m. You know, there's fresh, nobody's awake, nobody's interrupting me. Because I say, you know, my natural inclination, once things get rolling and things come in, I think because I'm a crisis manager and I've been a consultant for so long, you know, I'm so wired to be responsive. It's almost impossible, you know, for me to see something come in, somebody needs something, and to not just real quick, you know, register that I've got it or move it along in the process or whatever. I say sometimes that like, I work like I clean my house, you know, like I go into one room and I grab this thing and it goes over here, but on my way through this room, I saw that. It's just like a little buzzing around. And then like, it's, you know, all the rooms, everything's done all at once 5 hours later or whatever. Right. That's how it feels sometimes. Like, you know, that's how my
work. Yeah, everything is done in bits. Yeah.
And on my way to send this email, I saw this and, oh, let me go take a look at that. That reminds me of this.
That sounds like my entire day, every day.
Yeah. And it's not a productive way to work. I mean, I think all of these tips about, you know, focus on the task, see it through to completion, have that satisfaction of being able to check that off the list. I use a project management tool and keep a list. And it is great to say, okay, now that's done. And I can clear that out of my head for now and move on to the next thing. But, you know, managing my energy helps with that too. You know, when I'm, I can focus when I'm also, you know, rested and I've had sleep and I've had exercise and all those things. I really do notice a difference in my productivity and my ability to focus and not be sort of frenetic in my work style. You know, it's really closely related to how I'm managing my physical health.
Yeah, I think the self-care and last month's topic was all about that. I think managing your schedule is absolutely about self-care, because if you're so run down that you can't serve your clients or your employees, then you're not good for your business. So I think knowing what those are. The other thing about energizing and soul sucking is what tasks are those for you. So like speaking and training all day is really great and I love it. But then there's a letdown period and then there's a recovery period. And then there's like, oh, let's do it again. So knowing how much time it takes, like if you've got a 3-day event, then you know it's going to take 3 days to recover from that. Don't schedule any crazy things in those next 3 days. So knowing that is also good. And then knowing like the other thing is what tasks suck the energy right out of you. So like me, finance. And I think Grace is the same way of like, where did the receipts go? Are they in QuickBooks? Are they like, where does that, do you have someone to manage that for you? And I think the assistant is like the first delegation, and the second delegation becomes finance for a lot of business owners. So I'm going to hop down. I'm going to skip choosing your clients wisely for a minute and go down to how do you delegate with success? So not just learning to delegate, but fostering those trusted relationships, involving your kids all the way to succession planning. So actually I want to start with you, Shannon, because you just had I don't want to call it an incident. It's not an incident. It's not a crisis. It's a hiring snafu. Let's just talk about it that way.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not great at delegating. I mean, I shouldn't say that. It's something I've had to work on.
Yeah.
And, you know, really thinking about, is this something I have to do? Is this something I can let go of? Or, you know, sometimes I have to trick myself. I say, how about this, Shannon? Give this task to this person. Let them just move it forward. You can come back to it when you are going to anyway. Either they've evolved it further for you, or you're going to be where you were anyway. starting on it fresh. And, you know, 9 times out of 10, not only is that person able to evolve it further for you, but sometimes it's, you know, taking it all the way across the finish line. Mm-hmm. This happened to me yesterday. At the last minute, I said, you know what? I'm going to be driving. Let me tell you what this task is. You know, here's where it is in my inbox. And, you know, I got like 2 hours of sleep back because of that choice. She knocked it out of the ballpark.
Nice.
And you know, sometimes I have to challenge myself too, to let people have an opportunity to really grow and learn. And that's only going to happen by doing. Yeah. I mean, you can certainly have a certain amount of education or training in your profession, but, you know, as a business owner, you develop over time a way of doing things that is, it's you, it's modeled after you. And that's not going to be taught anywhere. It's going to be because you allow people in on that process to come alongside with you in the work enough times that they're able to, you know, mimic that and do that and replicate it over time. So it's something I challenge myself to do. I've gotten better at. And out of necessity too, you get to a point, you know, as an entrepreneur in the beginning, it's just like, all right, I'm going to outwork everything right now. And you get to a point where it's just, you're just crying uncle.
Exhausted and yes, burned out. Yeah. And you have 5 people working with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember when somebody told me, you'll know you're a CEO the day you don't know every single thing that's happening in your company at any given time. I remember thinking that would never happen. How could I possibly not know exactly what the state of something is? And now I'm like, because I got great people I trust. I don't happens every day.
Yeah. So Pam, I know your business changed when you, and I don't know what the, I can pinpoint it to when you hired your brother, but before that, it seemed like one HR crisis after another. And there was like always unsettled, like, I can't trust this person or I need to fire this person. And then you hired your brother, you have a twin, right? Yeah. Into your business. Tell us a little bit about that transition and transformation.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of interesting. You know how we always say, oh, I wish I could clone myself. Well, I did in a male version. So I do have a twin brother and he's my COO. So, but one of the things I had to do is I was so used to really doing everything, right? Because I am hiring my brother as a COO. I kind of felt like I went from like single mom to now I have a partner, you know, in this family to manage the kids. But so here's a paradigm shift that I had to do with all of my tasks. I had to, instead of saying, these are all the things I have to do today. And I know in the past we were taught what are A tasks, what are B and what are C. That personally didn't work for me. So I had big R, little R, and big R stood for big revenue and little R was little revenue. Okay. But little revenue is still important. So I had big R, little R. So I would write down my task and say, is this a big R or is it a little R? Then I had big L, little L. Big L was like, big life is at stake for my customers. So, and then little L was a little life that was, you know, at stake. So I would take all the things that I had to do in the day and said, is this big revenue, little revenue? Is there big life or little life? And then I would write those all down. And if it didn't fit into one of those 4 letters, then I delegated it. Mm-hmm. Right. So now I had a purpose, right? These are the things, and probably those are all the things that operations should handle, right? The CEO shouldn't handle that, right? So big R, little R, big L, little L is how I did that. And then the last thing that I had to say to myself, sometimes as women, I don't know, have you ever had that voice in your head where you want to delegate and then you hear yourself say, I'm afraid that ... You know what I mean? Like, oh, I'm afraid it's going to take me too long, or I'm afraid that the person does that. You know, that first part, I'm afraid that. If I hear myself say that, I have to delegate it, because fear stands for false excuses appearing real. So if I hear myself say, oh, I'm afraid that it's going to take too long for me to explain it. It's like, you know what? That's a false excuse appearing real. Go ahead and get it off the plate, because it's not big revenue, big life, little life.
Yeah. Awesome. I love that. That's super helpful.
Yeah.
So Grace,
I was just thinking, I'm intensely listening, and I'm thinking, you know, the thing is that when you are running an educational publishing company, you literally cannot do everything yourself. So I love delegating. And since the very beginning, you know, you mentioned finance. When we talk and people say, you know, well, when you start your business, you know, can you give us some tips of some of the most important things when you started? I always say this, and it's like, it's always so different. The very first thing that I did after we filed the LLC is I hired a bookkeeper. Like, I was not messing around with that. I brought on Janai. She's been with us the whole 10 years to do all the books. And I literally spent 1 hour on Fridays doing any odds and ends that, you know, weren't obvious to her in the spending or the income. And that's it. So like, I seriously delegated all the finance, like the day we started the company. I don't know if you knew that. But I've never had to deal with that. So she
Have the shoebox of receipts, and you'd be like, "What the hell?"
I would be dead. There's no way. And then you'd be trying to catch up. No. And then the other reason is the creativity, right? So what do we do? Is, you know, we create literature, and then the literature spawns online classes, which then spawns, you know, customer workshops and online classes, right? So for example, here's a children's book. This is our second one. You know, can I draw this? No, I cannot draw this. So we have an illustrator. Can I draw this? No, cannot. So all the creative work in the children's books, you know, that all of that belongs to Linda, right? So that is where there's great clarity that in the role, you know, I write the story, but then there's a publishing consultant, there's an illustrator, there's editors, there's proofreaders, there's a focus group of teachers. And none of that is handled by me. That is done by the creative team. And I love delegating that, because like right now we're working on the third book, and I don't have to do anything until there's a book for me to look at as a publisher, right? And so that's why now I can focus on the work I'm doing in DC with the universities, for the student veterans, and the branding work for the student veteran community. To have an appointment tomorrow with George Washington University with the director of student veteran services. So wish me luck. Okay, so I'm like fully in CEO, new revenue, new biz dev, you know, work while I'm here. But I love delegating. It's just the trick is, do you always have someone to delegate to, right? And that's, I guess, everyone's challenge.
Right. It's the, I know it's, like when I do this, it'll be easier and faster if I do it myself. And that is like the kiss of death. Like that's exactly the kind of task to be able to say, I need to find a trusted person to be able to delegate that to. Now, Alice, you have that in Tiffany. Tell us a little bit about what you have her do for you.
She is a 1099 contractor. On the top of running my daytime financial planning business, I have side hustle. It's public speaking. I'm testing the water speaking in a second language. So for many years, I really, really want to go, but I hold myself back because there is so many things behind the scene to get there for that 45 minutes presentation. The promotion before, the liaison and all these. So Tiffany Sausman is my stage ready guru. Mm-hmm. So she managed everything. My job is to sell the speaking opportunity because I have the connection. Mm-hmm. And then once we land, I'll just copy her saying that, you know, she's copied. She's my stage ready guru. Go to her. Don't come to me because you are hitting a disaster here, except for when I'm ready to go on stage.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a very perfect match. She loved the details. She loved to make sure that things happen the right way at the right time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Negotiations for you? I'm just curious if she does the negotiations for her too, or if Alice does.
Not at this time. She always come back, but we both sat down and decide, okay, virtual presentation. What is our bottom line? And then in person, I'm not in person yet, so I'm kind of careful, but we know what virtual is. And if somebody is a nonprofit, she know the bottom line. Okay, she know the bottom line. We want to help, but here is the in-kind payment that we'd like to receive in exchange so they can sign the contract. The contract is put together by one of our wonderful colleagues, mm-hmm. Laura Solano Owens. It's yeah. bulletproof. They signed it. I'm coming.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. I just was asking because I talked to a speaker right before I came over here and she was like, nope, I don't want to do any negotiation for any rates. I don't want anything like that. So she only does speaking through an agency that's going to do it for her. But I'm like, at some point, it's good for you to know how to do it.
Right.
Yes. Yes.
I'm all about the negotiation.
Exactly. I like it. Yeah.
And Pam, you've been doing that with your no equals new opportunity. So I know you've tried to, you've started doing more speaking. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. You know, the hardest thing is when I got into public speaking, because they would say, oh, we love you, you know, for this keynote or be the mistress of ceremonies or what have you. You know, the challenge was like, how do I ask people for money? Because I did a whole bunch like for free. And so I decided, well, I have this no equals new opportunity. So I just have to frame it. So now what I did is I have what's called, it's called the no sandwich. So basically, if someone asked me to speak, and because you don't want to do something that, quote, is not worth your time, right? Not as a bad thing, but remember, we only have 24 hours in the day. So I would, it's basically bread and then meat or veggies and then bread, okay? So the bread is always something happy, okay? The top and the bottom of the sandwich, something happy, and the middle is the pricing. So if they're like, Pam, we have this keynote, you know, Washington, D.C. coming up. Would you like to do it? The first part is like, oh, wow, this is so exciting. I would love to talk to XYZ. My schedule at that time of the year is going to be right around whatever, $1,000 or whatever it is I need to charge. And then, you know, I'm really looking forward to it. It's really a great time of year for me. Right. And so then what happened is once I started giving my new opportunity sandwiches out, then I was able to secure the speaking gigs that would fill my heart as well as fill the lost opportunity of me not being in the office, not working, and not working within my own business.
Yeah, great. So you've had...
I want to tell people that because now you guys know.
Well, Grace and I have that conversation all the time. How much are you charging for this? What are you charging for the keynote? We just share all that information because we're like, how is anybody going to know if they've never done a keynote what to charge for it? So we have those conversations. And sometimes it's like, well, I asked for $5,000 and they said that's beyond our budget. We can pay $2,000. Then you have to decide, is it worth the $2,000 or is there something else? Are they giving you access to the attendees? Are they buying copies of your book? Are they... you know, introducing you to 3 other people, like where is that value for you to be able to say yes to that? So I think that's important to find reliable people that you can talk to about that and the details about it.
Well, I think that's why you and I like it, because all those possibilities exist if you get to have that conversation, right?
Yeah.
Versus just, you know, it's $10,000 and I'm not getting on a plane, then that's a lot of lost opportunities to have conversations.
Yeah. And that's how your sandwich could be made, right? I'm so excited. I'd love to do it. My price is going to range from this number to this number. And then the last part of the sandwich, right? The bread, the happy is, you know, and if budget is an issue, we could look at, you know, purchasing my book or other avenues to be able to fit within your budget, right? So you're not saying no, you're not saying yes, but you're actually, you know, valuing your expectation.
So I'll
valuing their expectation of you.
I'll take your sandwich idea and I'll just I'll tell you that I do like a menu. Let's keep the food going. Okay. Yeah. I give them a menu and the proposal, option one, option two, option three. So it's like high, you know, middle. And then the third one is if these don't work, there's other ideas we could talk about, option three. And then that's the negotiation. And then the people who want to negotiate will go there, will say, I like this part, I like that part. But, you know, and then we talk about it versus the people who don't want to negotiate will be like, thank you so much for giving me choices. We want option one.
Right.
So it's like a menu of,
yeah,
for your sandwich.
Right. Want lettuce, pickles, tomatoes. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. And then they appreciate that variety that you're offering. Exactly.
I love it.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's chat about choosing your clients wisely. In terms of defining who you serve, who you don't want to serve, and then anything else you've learned along the way about not taking on needy clients. Because I know when I first met Pam, she's like, I've got these clients who are original clients. They got me, you know, started in my business, and now they're taking up all my time because they want something we don't do anymore, or we don't want to be doing anymore. So I know that can be hard when you're first starting your businesses. So Shannon, why don't you talk a little bit about how you've refined your vision of your ideal client in the last couple of years?
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting. I've had the, I guess, advantage when it comes to this conversation of being in consulting for almost 25 years, except for my 4-year stint in government, working in the mayor's office in Detroit, where I'm from. So, you know, this is something I've just learned over time. And we talk a lot about it in my, on my team. Everybody could tell you what our ideal client is. What we've done is we've looked at where have we had relationships or projects or clients where we've been really successful, meaning we've brought them a lot of value. They've been really happy. We know that we've really delivered something that made a difference for them. And we enjoyed it as well. It was great work. It, you know, allowed us to, you know, really do what we're great at or learn something new, or it was just really satisfying. And then what were the conditions that exist that enabled that success? What are the attributes of those relationships or those projects that allow us to bring, you know, great value and do great work? And it's really not that complicated. And for us, there's just some things, some hallmarks that we know if these things are in place, these are the environments in which we can be successful for clients. So really recognizing that and being able to articulate it. And sometimes, you know, I've even had my own team members say, not our target client, when I have somebody call me and they really need help or they really want whatever. And I'm kind of trying to talk myself into it because I don't want to say no and I want to help people. So it's really good to have gone so far down the path of knowing the answer to those questions that your own team members can remind you, you know, we may not be able to really help them the way that they're looking for because these things are not in place. Sometimes it has to do with internal leadership. You know, sometimes it has to do with the way they're organized. Sometimes it's sort of, you know, can we get behind and do we believe in what they're doing? Do we like, and is there an ease of communication? You know, you can get on a first pitch and know right away if you're going to have an easy time talking with this person and it's going to flow. That's one of the things I look for, you know, ease of communication, just a really good energy where we know there's going to be a nice, transparent, open, direct line of communication. And I can recognize that right out of the gate. So, you know, that's part of why I went into business for myself and why I think a lot of people go into business for themselves to have greater control over who they work with. Mm-hmm. And that's certainly true, you know, on the client side. That said, you know, what I say a lot of times is a lot of times people who need my help, something's broken. I mean, there's something that brought that organization to a place of crisis. Right. And so I also recognize too that no client is perfect. No organization is perfect. And part of what I do is help people and help companies that find themselves in really difficult spots. And sometimes that is the long road result of a dysfunction, yeah, or a gap or a, you know, a blind spot or something that they've left untended to. But that's satisfying too, to be able to come in and not only help remedy the immediate need, but also, you know, help a client see that they're going to end up back here in this situation if they don't deal with X. You know, and so, and that's not because I have a whole lot of expertise in every problem a company could have, but you know, you can't see the back of your own head.
Right.
Sometimes it's just someone from the outside with those fresh eyes can say, here's what I see is happening.
So when anyway. That employee comes to you and says, they don't really fit as our ideal client, what do you do in that situation?
Say no.
Is it like a catch and release, like dating, or is it like?
I've said no many, many times, because I know, especially if it's going to be hugely disruptive to the business model, it's going to demand. Sometimes it's an energy question. How much energy is this project or client going to need? And is there the potential for a long-term relationship? A lot of times, especially in the crisis arena, people want immediate help, but you know that it doesn't have the markers of a potential long-term relationship. And at the end of the day, it's, you know, maybe not worth the disruption that it's going to cause. Or you just don't have the energy based on what your load is at the time or what's happening in your life to really give to that project. So we say no, we definitely say no. I've gotten pretty good at saying no. You know, people have said things to me that stick in my head. What somebody said to me one time, nobody's having a meeting this week to discuss how to make your life easier. Like, it is up to you and you alone. Nobody's thinking about you. That's not their job. It's your job. Nobody's having that meeting right now.
Right.
You know, and that has stuck in my head. And, you know, and I've
got kids having that meeting.
Right. I've gotten comfortable with the fact that I know that every day I am probably not, you know, disappointing somebody or not living up to somebody's expectations. And that's okay.
Yeah.
Because if I, you know, tried to do everything everybody needed or expected from me, it would be at the expense of my health and sanity. So I've made peace with, you know, the fact that I'm not going to make everybody happy.
Yeah. I think one of the things, Grace, you and I have talked about is that if it's not a perfect fit into one of your three categories, you're saying no to it, unless it fits an exception, which was, is it very lucrative? Like, is it worth the time and energy that you're going to put into saying yes to build your revenue? So I know that's one thing that was important to look at as well.
Yeah. Well, can I kind of jump on what Shannon just said in terms of, you know, so in emergency medical services, right, you know, we're always pulled in many ways, right, with our customers, right? They need CPR training, they need active shooter training, they need, you know, evacuation, right? And when I worked on an ambulance, we always had this statement that said, not my patient, not my problem. Mm. Right. And so, Shannon, that's kind of like when I have to say no to something, it's like, well, not my patient, not my problem. Right. Once I move them into ER, that's ER's problem. Right. But when it also comes to what we're going to, you know, clients we're going to pick up or not, I think I'm very clear on what our mission statement is. Our mission statement is we make sure people don't die. That is the mission statement. So the clients that come into us are clients who are required to protect the life of their employee. And not every employer is required, right? A social media company, they're not required to, you know, do CPR training or first aid. But a construction company or a school, they are required by law, by OSHA, to keep those people alive, right? And so as we bring on clients, right, or sometimes friends will refer clients to you, and those are the toughest, right? Because they want to refer the restaurant owner to us. Well, it's like, great, but they're not required to keep their employees safe. So we have to say no from the get-go, but I'll give them a referral to somebody else who could, you know, handle that. So I think it's being clear what your mission statement is and being very clear on what customers you're going to bring on. Are you required to keep them safe? And then if it's like, let me use the NBA. So the National Basketball Association, that was a big project we took on in 2020. And are they required to keep the players alive and safe? Maybe, maybe not. But I'm a huge basketball fan. My husband proposed at a basketball game. Our first date was at the Warrior game. So I am so passionate about basketball. So then that's the only time I'm going to veer. If I am so personally passionate that I just want to work for the Golden State Warriors and get free tickets, then yeah, I'm going to take on that type of client.
Awesome. Yeah. I'll just add one other thing too. And I agree with all of that. You know, sometimes the other thing that is a part of the calculation is, you know, I've come to realize that there are clients that have been with me from the very beginning and where there is a trusted relationship, where, you know, they've been a loyal client for a long time and they deserve the best of my team's energy and focus. That means something to me. It means a lot to me. And so that's the other thing I think about too, is in terms of capacity for a project at a time, you know, it cannot be anything that disrupts or threatens our ability to really focus on and deliver results for those clients that, you know, have been with us and have allowed us to grow with them and, you know, we have that great relationship with. That's for me, just, you know, it's the most satisfying part of consulting is having those long-term relationships, and there's no, you know, big influx or injection of cash project that's worth, you know, giving less than the best to those clients. And that's just the bottom line. They deserve that. You know, when someone's with you, and they've been your, you know, rock star client for that long, it definitely means something.
I want to add kind of a marketing based answer to this question, because as I was listening to this, I was nodding to a lot of what you're saying in terms of, you know, the clients that you have and the clients that are, you know, being referred to you. But, you know, one of the things that I'm thinking of that I haven't yet heard, so I want to say it, is, you know, when you're creating your marketing plan and you think about, you know, who you're going to propose your new offers to, let's just focus on that part. You know, certainly in our company with educational publishing, you know, there's a natural market for children's books, which is different than a branding book, right? So there's different markets. So you do your marketing plan and then you describe your client that you're going to go after. And then a wonderful thing happens along the way is additional value is realized by people that you were never targeting in the first place, right? And so markets expand, right? And so then that becomes an interesting question and, you know, comes back to mission statement, like Pam said. But then, you know, then a pandemic comes along and then what are you going to do, right? So I'll just tell you like what happened in the last year and a half is our ideal client for our publishing company was always the K-12 school districts for the first book and the children's books. And that always piggybacked with consulting for school districts and then teacher conferences for keynotes and workshops in the classroom. So that was like a nice market. Well, then it implodes. And if we weren't already doing other work, like the branding work for universities targeted at student veterans, then I think we would have shut down if that was our only business revenue. And so the ideal client, and you know, this is part of what Sonia is, you know, different businesses that we're doing. I've thought about this a lot during the pandemic. And what has become really clear now is there will always be clients that naturally show up, maybe referred, maybe they just hear about you, that really just make you think, right? Like, did we miss going after this entire market segment when we launched and we were thinking only about these things? So the ideal client might not even be someone you thought about yet when you're inventing new things and innovating, right? So, you know, this is really specific to how we do things. So for example, the branding work that we've been doing, it started as a workshop 9 years ago at universities. And what I learned then is universities have money to pay for professional development service for student veterans. And my heart says, well, I want to help all veterans. But there's this funny thing that goes on in the veteran community is a lot of people tell veterans that they shouldn't pay for anything. It should all be free. So then you're in a situation where an organization, a nonprofit, contacts you because they heard you're doing great work at universities and they want your services, but they don't want to pay. Right? Or they want to pay something that we're going to say no to. So then that becomes the problem of, okay, well, I'd like to work with you guys, but we have to say no. That's very clear. But I'll tell you that, you know, it was the workshop, and then it became the class and became the books. And then guess what? Now the federal government is another client that we never really looked at seriously, that's what I'm really here doing now. Is we haven't really tried to pitch the veteran focused marketing skills that are not taught by the DD when we get out. I really want to have the federal government, certain agencies as our customers. Wow, that's taken a lot of work, right? So it's the marketing-based view of what is the ideal client. And I think that we have to always keep a little part of our CEO selves, you know, available for business development in a direction that we hadn't thought of before. Yeah. For the simple fact that the ideal clients that existed in the case of the children's book market sometimes disappear, right? And so it's just a different way of answering the question, because you still have to say yes and no, but I'm always on the lookout for what did we miss? What did we not go after in the initial marketing plan that suddenly this new segment showed up? So it's a different, you know, different question. I think just keeping the mind open to what other possibilities you didn't think of in the first place.
So how do you say no gracefully to those ones that don't fit your business model in the first place, or now that you've pivoted or changed? Mm-hmm.
Or something else showed up that you weren't looking at in the first place, which has happened several times. Yeah, that's, and remember when you and I talked, I was like, okay, Sonia, so if you want me to focus on one product line, do I say no to the parents of special kids with special needs? Do I say no to the Hispanic community? Do I say no to the veterans? Like, which one do I say no to? Because all of these are clients and organizations serving those communities. And that becomes harder when there's passion behind it. But that comes back also to the same questions, is you have to draw the line, and you have to say yes when it's lucrative, or you have to get creative and get a sponsor so that you can be there when they don't have the cash to pay, right? So it's creativity also.
So Pam, when you were moving to the virtual reality product from your in-person training, did that require you to let go of certain clients that were just in-person training, or how did that transition go?
Yeah. So basically, just like every entrepreneur, right? After 20 something years, you know, it's like, it gets more competitive. So, you know, I mentioned the CPR training, the active shooter, and all of these emergency trainings we have to teach. Well, I have this concept of, I wonder if I could put it into a virtual reality headset and put myself into the world, all the teaching and all the content, in order to scale. Right. So then I don't have to be, or my team doesn't have to be all places at all time. You can just learn everything in here. And so, you know, in trying to do that, it was really a way to like bring innovation and be able to, you know, give an offering. Now, the interesting thing, kind of like what Grace said, is I initially built it for our current customer base. Right, as a way to train twice the number of people and half of the time, right? Because in VR, you see it, hear it, and do it all at the same time. So a 4-hour training becomes a 2-hour training. 1-hour training becomes 30 minutes. It's awesome. Well, then little, you know, my understanding, all of the tech companies and social media companies, they were like, oh, we want that. Now, all those, like, I'll just use social media and tech companies, right? Before, maybe I wouldn't service them because their mission really wasn't within my mission, right? But now they are within my mission, because you know why? They will pay twice the amount of money that maybe a water district would pay, right? And so now it became a way to service more customers, bring in more revenue, and actually be far more profitable, yeah, right, to do that. And then during the pandemic, we were shipping these things to people's homes. I mean, it was remarkable. If all of you were on the line, I would ship it to your homes with the CPR doll. We would Zoom in, and then I would have everybody on Zoom with their headset, their CPR doll, and they were just kind of in the headset and pushing, and I'm just on Zoom making sure. And the great thing now that we're coming out of the pandemic is we have twice the number of customers, because now we have all of our, you know, customers we are serving in the pandemic shipping these things to, and then all of our old-fashioned customers who just want us, they're all coming back. So it's kind of like what Grace said, and it's like, if I knew that, I would have made VR like 10 years ago.
Right? That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, it's just, you know, something happened and forced you to innovate, look in a different direction and service a different market segment. And you didn't see it coming, but there it is. Yeah. And then, yeah, then when the pandemic, you know, we're coming out of it, and then, hey, guess what? Schools are open. Schools are now calling us to book events for the fall, for Hispanic Heritage Month and Veterans Day. And so you do, you end up in a way just with more customers because you did something different. And I think that's totally cool. So that's going to present its own problems and being able to do all those things. But it's a better problem to have than you didn't have enough to survive the pandemic. So bravo to you. High five.
So that was great expansion. So Pam, did you end up taking investment money, or did you end up doing, what did you end up doing to expand?
You know, what's interesting, I did try to shop it around to some VC investors, and like nobody would invest in it because they're like, does it work? Right? Because I had no sales, no nothing. And I was like, no, that's why I'm seeking VC money. And then I decided, like, you know what? I'm instead of trying to, you know, borrow $1 million for a 10x, I was like, you know what? Let me just scale back my expectations. So I end up went to my bank, borrowed $100,000, and basically built the thing and released it, made the $100,000 back. And then now it's totally profitable, and I own the whole thing, you know? So,
well, now they'll invest.
Yes, and now they invest. So now we're looking at, do we want to scale? What do we want to do with it? Get into other VR training. We have like 6 different VR trainings. But now we have the choice. But at least I know that I don't have to.
Right.
Right.
Different flavors of getting there. Yeah, that's super excellent. So Alice, we didn't talk really about how you're in a service business. So how do you seek out, you know, choosing those clients wisely?
Just like everybody, I like to echo, having the mission statement so people know who we stand for is so very important. So I thought this is also leading to marketing, but a different type of marketing that Grace talk about, because marketing is really getting your name known. So when somebody needs something, or somebody knows somebody needs the thing that you're providing, it's easy for them to mention your name. And in my world, I'm in financial services, a lot of this is done through word of mouth.
Yeah.
A lot. So if I said I'm a financial advising firm, we have 8 great people sitting in Clackamas, Oregon. Who cares? Who cares, really? But if we say that we're focusing on small business owner within this range, they really have a vision to exit, and they better be owned by a woman business owner. Yeah. Now we're clicking.
Right. And it's easier for me to send you people just like that if I know that is exactly what you're looking for.
Yes. So that's how, you know, a lot of female business owners come on board, especially in the pandemic. And also our concept, because we have a few lines of business. We have fee-based consultation, we have investment management, and then we have insurance. The fee-based consultation doubled last year.
Yeah,
people want to know. Everybody is wanting to know, okay, if something like this happened, I'm going to exit.
Yeah.
Can I have 5 years, 2 years, or tomorrow? No, I can't do business with you tomorrow. The planning running this and it's too short. Yeah. But if you do have
3, 5, 7,
depending on where you are at, we can help you.
Yeah.
We can help you. So it's easier if you are clear, if I'm clear about who I'm looking for. And just now, Grace, appreciate that you said, well, there is, the new business is coming through, and you just need to look at it, think about it, and be able to say, okay, this is something I haven't thought about, but I'm going to take a courageous step to get to know more and perhaps develop a new line. So that goes back to what everybody is saying about energy and capacity. If you are dead at the end of the day, I don't care who's knocking on the door. Seriously, you're dead.
Yeah.
You can't even open the door and see, oops, who's that? Is it $1 billion waiting for me to just pull it in?
Yeah.
It's like, well, forget about the door. Let's go to bed, right?
Yeah.
So retaining the time for us to be able to think about what we need to think about is super important.
Yeah.
That's why we have a team, and delegation is important because they can do their highest talent. Yeah. And our highest talent maybe run the business, strategize, and look for new things.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah. I think one of the things I want to just tag on to what you guys are saying in terms of forced to innovate versus choosing to innovate. One of the things we learned in the Caliban is adapt and perform. So you might get there and the stage is not going to fit the 50 people you brought, or you might get there and it's like, oh, well, you have 10 minutes to perform instead of the 30 you thought you were going to get. So whatever those parameters are that change, or the bus is late, you know, whatever it is, you still have to perform and you still have to wow the crowd and you still have to show up and be present and give an amazing performance. So I think everything we talked about in terms of being able to adapt to what's going on in the pandemic and to make a whole new product line like you've done, Pam and Grace, and be clear about who you can serve and how, and do that the best you can, no matter what's going on, you know, whatever is falling down around your ears. You know, I want to give you guys each a last word, and then I'll ask you a few more questions. So if you want to summarize, and I'll just start with you, Alice, if you have any last parting words for business owners, especially women business owners who are feeling overwhelmed, feeling like they can't set priorities, what advice would you give them?
I thought of two things. The first, I'm a copycat, so Shannon said it in a different way, but I come prepared with my version. If you really want peace and balance, you're gonna make somebody unhappy.
Yeah.
And align that with dare to want what you want. Just dare yourself. If you want it badly, you're able to make the tough decision, say the tough no, and just say, you know, I can't deal with this. I'm going to refer you, like Pam said.
Yeah, nice. Thank you. Shannon, last words of wisdom that you would like to share?
You know, I'm going to introduce a new idea.
Awesome.
I was talking, it was interesting. I had the opportunity to go back and interview my very first boss in PR, also an entrepreneur, a woman who taught me so much and was just, you know, she's retired. She's, you know, still in Detroit and doing some great stuff. But anyway, I had a chance to talk to her and I was asking her this same question, you know, what advice would you have for women, especially women entrepreneurs? And she said something that just really, it was something about the way she said it. And it does actually tie into energy, but she said, you know, at some point you just have to believe in yourself. And, you know, I think as entrepreneurs, you know, it doesn't matter how many years your business is established, you still have these moments where you're like, I mean, I have given it everything this week. I'm tired. I don't even know how much belief I can bring to this new thing I'm doing, or this new, you know, product or service line I've created. And I
or
just
the new one.
When I heard her say that, I was like, that's exactly right. Sometimes you just have to bring that belief for yourself in what you're doing. And, you know, it sounds so simple to say, but, you know, it's true. And that's energizing to say, you know, sometimes I just have to like rationalize it. Like, look at my track. Alice, you said it to me once, not even that long ago. You were like, look at your track record. There's no way you don't win. I was like, that's right. Right, Alice.
That's awesome.
But sometimes, you know, just even reminding yourself of who you know you are and what you're capable of, and bringing up that belief in what you're doing every single day, you know, even if you got to dig deep for it, I think is also a huge, huge source of energy. So believe in yourself.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things that's super important. I talk to a lot of people who are like trying to make the leap from being an employee to owning their own business or pursuing whatever they want to do. And one of the things is the naysayers. They start listening to the naysayers, whether it's family or friends or anybody they tell their idea to, as opposed to, I know this is going to work. I can do this myself. I can believe in myself to do it. And that's one of the things that stops them before they even get started. So I'm glad to hear that advice from your first boss.
I want to take that and like exclamation point it. Okay. 2 months ago, I had a phone call with Julia Pimsler. And if you know this name, Julia Pimsler, she wrote Million Dollar Women, and she created the Pimsler method for teaching small children foreign languages.
Foreign language, yeah.
So she has this book, Million Dollar Women, and what she talks about and the way she talks to women is so direct. It's like the toughest love you've ever heard, okay? I'm serious. It's like she kicks women in the butt, especially where it comes to going out and finding funding. Okay. And we kind of alluded to that earlier, but I had a phone call with her, like a whole hour long phone call. And, you know, I listened to her audiobook. And since that phone call, I sat back one day and I was like, you know, we've never really gone to even talk to angels or really sought any money beyond an SBA back loan, which we got a couple years ago, and, you know, microloans before that. And I remember saying, after I talked to her, I'm like, why haven't we done it? You know, if 23-year-old dudes that don't have a product and don't have customers, but just have an idea, are willing to go out in front of people and bullshit their way through and get hundreds of thousands of dollars and millions of dollars, we have customers, products, awards, multiple, like, why haven't we done it? And the, you know, there's answers to that question. But after I talked to her, I went and made a phone call to, and I told you this, Sonia, to an attorney who is very well connected in the angel VC world that happens to be a veteran mentor of mine that came to Bunker Labs. And he's like, what are you waiting for? I mean, like, you know, why haven't you asked me before? Of course you can get funded. I mean, it's like, right. And so, you know, now, and so what he told me to do is I need you to put a presentation together for both lines of business that you want to scale with. Okay. How have you monetized so far? You know, what is it? How have you monetized? How do you want to monetize going forward? And what kind of a team do you need to build it? Yeah. And so when I look at the federal agencies, the military community, and the ridiculous amount of money that we've sold in the last decade with just me as the salesperson. Yeah. Yeah, you know, we've got other team members, but like, who's actually selling? It's me. Can we just say it's me? And so I that's what I led with. I said, you know, let me tell you this crazy story about this woman who sold this much. And that's just that product line. Let me tell you about this product line, right? And he's just like, oh my God, just get it in slides and send it to me. And then I will help you decide which one of these is, you know, fundable. And so that's a piece of advice is, and, you know, to channel Julia is women are holding themselves back. Whereas women, you know, men will just go do it. Hey dude, I've got an idea. You win $50,000? That's in her book. Whereas, you know, we like tend to want everything to align and we want this perfection before we'll go out and get the money that make the scaling and the team building possible sooner. Yeah. And so since I listened to her and read her thing, I made that phone call to the guy and I'm doing the content. Tomorrow I have one meeting in the morning and the rest of the day, I'm just focusing on that, you know, to get ready to go pitch to Angel. So I'm like so focused on that right now. And I just wanted to echo that because I really feel like until I heard the way she talks about it and how she did it and how she's seen women just not do it, mm-hmm. until I really heard her, I probably wouldn't have done it. But now this is all I'm thinking about. So
I've seen that borne out. So in the last 20 years of working with startups, all but one founded by a woman, the fear factor is huge in terms of not going for it or just being paranoid that someone's going to steal my IP or like whatever reason. It's fascinating to me. So that's one of the reasons why I'm doing this work in terms of the coaching and consulting is to help women make that leap to that next level. Anything else, Grace, that you want to say as a last thought on this?
No, that's just the big one for me right now, because, you know, that with the schedule, I mean, you know, tomorrow I'm having one meeting so that I can just really ignore the whole world and only do this because no one else is going to do this part. This is really the CEO, get ready to go talk to investors part. And I just think that for me, that encapsulates the energy. I'm conserving all energy for tomorrow. And then I'll probably go play. I'll probably go kayaking in the evening just because I've been working so hard. I've already seen the day tomorrow, right? but just really to really realize that we're holding ourselves back so much from the growth that we could achieve sooner because of that. So just read her stuff.
Yeah, excellent. Pam, any last thoughts that you want to share?
Yeah, I actually have two. One of them is a quote from someone else and the other is my quote. So I'll start with the quote for someone else. So, you know, when things go wrong with the customer, like something goes wrong, something doesn't get delivered, you don't meet expectation. So I heard a female CEO that says, if you're going to eat shit, don't nibble. You're gonna eat shit, don't nibble, yeah. Right? If you got to refund them, if you got to redo a project, like whatever it is, if you're gonna eat shit, don't nibble, just get it done, finish it, and then get to the next project. So that's gotten me through a lot. The other one is to always have hope. Right? And it's going to stand for H-O-P-E. So the H, when you're an entrepreneur, is you just have to be happy. Like you have to be happy about the work that you're doing and who you're doing it for. So H is happiness. O is opportunity, which means you must create the opportunity. Opportunity doesn't knock on your door, right? So you create the opportunity. We created virtual reality before other people were doing virtual reality safety. And then, you know, folks come in the door. So happiness, opportunity, the P stands for profitability, is only take on projects that you're profitable, you know, because at the end of the day, I remember my Vistage chairman was going through my books and he's like, are you a nonprofit? And I was like, no, why? He goes, because your books look like a nonprofit. And I'm like, oh my God, you know? So I really had to change the business model and make sure I'm profitable. And the E just stands for excellence. You know, at the end of the day, we're women. A lot of us are minority women and we just have to be better than the next person. So, you know, it's up to you to be excellent. So entrepreneurs, always be happy, create opportunities, be profitable, and be excellent.
Awesome. I really appreciate that. I've got one question we didn't quite get to, so I'm going to throw this out there. So how to look for the right partners or investors. So how, and then the other part of this is how to navigate the decisions to spend money. It says look like a big company in order to sell to big companies and clients. So Pam, I'm going to start with you on that one because you've been a small company and you were women founded and you've sold into some really big companies like Toyota and Warriors. And before you answer, I just want to say thank you, Shannon. I really appreciate your contribution. And I know you got a hard stop to go get your kids.
I gotta feed them. I mean, can you believe it? They demand to be
food. Fed. What?
Yeah. Do we want to, can I pass a baton to Shannon so she can answer that before she has a depart?
Yes. Yes.
Sure. So repeat the question.
So it was, how do you look for the right partners or investors? Like if you're ready to grow, and then how do you really navigate the decision to spend money to try to look like a big company to sell into big companies? Mm. And you have some big name clients too, but you've been consulting for a long time.
Yeah. You know, I did. So it's interesting listening to Grace and Pamela talk about innovation. I did something similar in 2020. I built a technology. I built an app, something really innovative for my industry, anticipating what a shift might be coming out of a global pandemic in terms of organizations and companies' readiness to plan to respond to crisis from a communications perspective. And I did, Pam, what you did. I went and borrowed the money myself, built it. And, you know, I'm heading out on faith that I've got a great product. And
you do.
I think I do. I'm just getting ready to launch that and start that process in July. But I definitely believe in, you know, you have to at some points behave in a way that has the markers of, you know, you're a company that's developing new products and marketing itself. And you can't have that sort of, you know, that scarcity mindset.
Yeah, the hesitation, the scarcity.
That makes you want to hold on to things and conserve, you know, your dollars when you know that in order to grow, you're going to have to build the brand, and that you have to reinforce in people's minds what they already think they know about you. And that you have to be able to, you know, meet your clients where they're headed, not even where they're at, but where they're going to be next and what that need is going to be. So, you know, in consulting, a lot of times you do this thing where you wait until your team and your capacity is stretched so thin that you're crying uncle. And that's when you hire somebody just to relieve the pressure. You've already got enough work for that new person. Yeah. And I this year I did things a little bit different, and I hired the team and put in place the team that I would need if I were to be successful with my plan. And now I got to deliver on that. So, you know, it is kind of an interesting thing that you wade through and intentionally make decisions. But I think it comes back to that mindset, either that growth mindset or that scarcity mindset, and believing in yourself and saying, I'm building this. I know my industry. I know that nobody has anything like this, and I'm going to build the team that I'm going to need if I'm going to be successful. And I'm going to, you know,
companies do want to work with.
I'm not going to half-ass this. I can't. I'm already in it.
Awesome. So,
thank you so much. I'm so sorry, you guys. I have to jump. I wish I could hear everybody's, but I can listen to it or watch it. Really thank great so spending much. Time with you all.
Appreciate it.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye, hun. Okay, right. Kim.
So yeah, I'll just keep it short. So in terms of getting a partner or getting investor, I know this is what we had to do was, is it nice to have or need to have? I go back to that. Is it nice to have an investor, or is it nice to have a partner, or do we need to have an investor, or do we need to have a partner? Right. And so that's kind of how I made the decision. Initially, I was like, I need to have an investor. And then I was like, wait, nice to have an investor, but I don't need to have one. So I think that's the first part. And sometimes we need to have a partner because the client that we're going after requires a bigger company, right? Mm-hmm. Or requires more capital or more resources. So identifying that. And then I think the other part, and every woman business owner, whether you're a team of one or you're a team of 100, you have to change your pronoun and use the word we. Now, sometimes like women will feel inauthentic because they're like, well, it's just me. And I go, no, there's you, yourself, and I. There's three people. That's a we, right? Beyonce's got multiple personalities, you know?
Yeah.
So I think always using we, when you build your website and you put, there needs to be a lot of we and our, like, I think there needs to be more of that.
Agree.
You know, and I think once I started doing like that, then all of a sudden these big global companies were like really start. I mean, like I said, I mean, between like Twitter and the NBA, and then Major League Baseball came on board. And like you said, Toyota, Honda, like they all started coming on because I started using we.
Pam, that is so important. And I'm so happy that the woman who is my production manager for the first book that we were launching the first year, she told me that. And so I didn't start anything that we did with me. I mean, like, yeah, there's a about, right? But right away it was we. And so, yeah, I mean, we were invited to serve Toyota and do, you know, not only like a journalist lunch with books and a whole, you know, supporting a Toyota Prius launch in Southern California because it was we. And so that is so critical. And then from that, it became government agencies, you know, CalVet, and they're not going to hire you if you're you, one person. Yeah. And I know at the end of the day,
if you use there is a team. If you use the word I too much in your prompt, like I can do this and I can have this proposal. It needs to be, we will have this proposal to you.
And there was a call with the Department of Labor the week before I came out here, and it was all we. I even like scripted it. We've done this. We can give you the capability statement. Yes, we can deliver a past performance grid of who we have served. So I think after 10 years, I've just gotten used to it, but that is such an incredibly important point for perception, for capability. It's you're communicating capacity amazing capability, you know, beyond what you think you have, but you know that when you get there, that you can get it done because that's what we do, you know, jump out of the airplane and build your parachute on the way down. It's literally what we do, but right. You won't get the business if you keep saying me, I, yeah. Right? It's critically important.
Excellent. Me, myself, and I, and we, thank you.
Yeah. Well, and I did want to add one thing on my own. Okay. I was just piggybacking her. Okay. So this kind of wraps up my thing here. The reason that we got funded by the SBA back loan was because I made the decision that, hey, here's an opportunity to pitch. I had never even done a pitch thing because like, why would I pitch? Right. Yeah. But a pitch opportunity came up in Sacramento and it was like a quick 2-minute video. And then they did some finalists. And then there was 4 finalists. It was a veteran, a military spouse, entrepreneurship summit. So I thought, what the hell, you know, let's do it. And so then I got picked to do it. And so then we had 4 minutes on stage to do the pitch. And there was a cash prize, which I didn't win, but one of the judges approached me and he says, I can't believe you didn't win. You missed winning by 1 point. I'm like, I know, what the heck, right? He says, but that plan you just presented there, and it was for the personal branding, the online class, the book that was going to come one day and the workshops. He's like, I can get you funded. That plan is solid. And that's how we got funded. Because one of the judges at the pitch contest really liked the business plan that we put forward. And that's literally how we got that first 6-figure loan. Because awesome. I decided to pitch. So it all comes back around to the believing in yourself, but then actually stepping into the public realm with a really great idea that's fundable. Yeah. And then see what happens. And if we hadn't gotten the funding, I would have gotten some great feedback, which I did get, right? But we ended up getting funding. And yeah. That's just made all the difference to being able to develop the second line of business that really kept us in business during the pandemic. So kind of wraps it all up. You know, but just don't be afraid to just, you know, what would a 23-year-old dude do? He would just go pitch it. Go do it. And yeah.
Excellent. I want to thank all of you for coming and sharing your wisdom with everybody. And I really appreciate you taking the time to do that today. I do want to let people know that my book is downloadable. So Welcome to the Next Level, which you can see here, hopefully. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I put the link in the chat, which is soniasigler.com/book. It's Welcome to the Next Level. And that is a wrap. I appreciate it. Thank you for showing up.